I always say that during a gospel meeting, time goes very quickly, it seems, whenever I think of the week that's in progress wherever I am. But it goes slowly from the standpoint of being away from home. I am anxious to get back home and to see Jane. Grown quite accustomed to her in about 35 years of marriage. We're almost to 35. Lord willing, we'll be there in November if I behave myself and other things don't happen. And of course, on the way home, I'll have to detour off the track just a little bit in Indianapolis and see my grandson that I promised not to mention in every sermon. And I think I left him out of a couple of them. And so I'm looking forward to all of that. But I have very much enjoyed the week with you and appreciate the opportunity to have been able to come back and be with you again. I don't know if you have benefited a lot. I hope that you have, that you are spiritually better off than you were before the meeting began, but I know that I am. It has been a very encouraging week for me. Most of my preaching life I have been working with smaller churches, and so it's always been a little bit encouraging to know that there are more brethren in some places who are willing to serve the Lord than in others, and to have at least a week here and there to associate with them. And such has been the case this week. There are about 45, if we are all there, in attendance in Crestwood, Illinois. By the way, if you are in Chicago and you're anywhere toward the south side, for whatever reason, stop in and see us. The building is located about 10 miles south of Midway Airport in Crestwood, but just to give you an idea of where we are. And so please come by and see us. I want to say once again also thank you for all of the meals that were provided either in your homes or in restaurants. I enjoyed that very much. And certainly I'd be remiss if I didn't say just a little bit about Keith and Rita and the time that I enjoyed being with them. I've known Keith, I guess, now for over 20-some years, and I've grown to love and appreciate him. And as with all preachers, the wife that we have is our secret weapon. That's what I tell people Jane is. She's my secret weapon. And we could not be what we are without the good wives that we have. And so I've appreciated that week as well. And so come and see us if you're up that way. I decided to close the meeting tonight by taking a look at passing the mantle. And you may be familiar with the background of this. Elijah in 2 Kings chapter 2 is about to be whisked up in the chariot into the heavens. And of course, Elisha is going to be his successor. And there is something that takes place very interestingly here in the process of this change taking place as he's about to go up in this whirlwind, verse 1 of chapter 2 says. And Elisha just refuses to leave his side. He says, "I will not leave you," verse 2. So they went on down to Bethel from Gilgal. And at Bethel, he once again says, "I will not leave you." So they went down to Jericho. And they questioned him again. "Do you not know that the Lord will take away your master from over you today?" And he answered, "Yes, I know. Be still." Elijah said to him, "Please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." And so the two of them went on. And if we hurry on down then to verse 11 and verse 12. "It came about as they were going along and talking that, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, which separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven, and Elisha saw it and cried out, 'My father, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen.' And he saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them in two pieces. He also took up the mantle of Elijah that fell from him and returned and stood by the bank of the Jordan. And he took the mantle of Elijah that fell from him and struck the waters and said, 'Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?' And when he had also struck the waters, they were divided here and there, and Elisha crossed over." This was sort of a ceremony, I would suppose, of the passing of the mantle. Elisha had already been named in 1 Kings chapter 19 and verse 16 as Elijah's successor. And from that time on, he served him faithfully. And now the time has come, of course, for Elijah to go on to his eternal reward, one of two men who did not see death. And Enoch, of course, being the other one. And so the time came then to pass the mantle from one man to another, for Elisha to step up and take the responsibility of being a prophet and to take up some of the work that God had assigned for Elijah to do, and Elisha was going to finish some of that work. And so basically what we're going to do in this lesson is just look at that phrase and make some applications of it. We're going to take a look at how that the mantle has to be passed in the home, and that the mantle has to be passed in the church. And so this symbolizes something. This symbolizes the changes that take place as one leaves the scene of activity in this world and goes on to their reward, and another generation comes along to take up the work. And so that's basically what we're going to do. How does this apply in the home? How does this apply in the church? And I would suggest to you that though none of us are prophets today, we are yet recipients of the responsibility of those that have gone before. And we need to understand that we must shoulder that responsibility and take up the mantle when it is passed to us. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. The mantle, of course, was a sign and symbol of the prophet's work. And so it was not given here to Elisha because he just needed something to keep him warm. I'm persuaded he probably already had a mantle of his own. There was some significance, you see, in that this mantle, this one that belonged to Elijah, was passed to him. Now, we talk about sometime the passing of the baton. And there are certain races, relay races, where one runner starts out with the baton, and he runs a certain distance, and then his part of that race is over, and another fellow starts running and catches up with him and takes the baton and goes on with it. Well, that's sort of what we're talking about here. That it is the responsibility of each and every one of us as children of God to reach out and take hold of that baton of service to God. Now, it won't all be the same. There were other capable men in Elisha's day, but they weren't chosen to take up the mantle from Elijah. Elisha was. They had their own responsibilities in service to God. So this was a figurative thing here of passing the work from Elijah to Elisha. Now, of course, faithfulness was required on the part of Elijah and Elisha. Elijah was a faithful prophet. I don't think anybody would take issue with that. And this work was not assigned to someone who was semi-faithful. It was passed on to someone else that would have the faith and the courage to get the job done. And so I want this lesson to be a challenge to each one of us to consider that in our lifetime, it is our job to take up the mantle of service to God. And some of those will involve leadership positions, and we'll talk about them. Some of them will be more service positions that will require submission to those that are in the leadership. But do not misunderstand, each and every one of us has a mantle to take up, and it's not something that's optional. Elisha had proven his dedication in serving Elijah, and he had prepared himself, therefore, to take up the mantle. And I want to turn our attention, first of all, to the home, and suggest that in the home, there is the mantle of leadership, and that mantle will pass from father to son. Fathers are the head of a household. They are to bring their children up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. They are the head of the household, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. Several times, of course, in Ephesians chapter 5, we find that out. Now, it may be that the feminists don't like to read that. It may be that they refer to, as they used to anyway, the Apostle Paul as some kind of a male chauvinist. But this is the revelation of God. And so husbands must take very seriously their responsibility as head of the wife and as the leader in the family. But husbands, when you have a son who is looking to you, you must teach them about leadership. You must teach them what it is to lovingly lead your family. Notice verse 25. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Husbands, your wife is not your doormat. You don't wipe your feet on her. Husbands who treat their wives as if they are something to be used as a slave and a servant and not to be considered at all are going to be in hell someday. Now that's pretty plain, but that's the truth of it. He says, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Some husbands won't sacrifice anything for their wives. They want everything for themselves. They are completely self-centered. Now you think about it, especially if you have a son. That son is watching you every day. And the mantle of leadership in the home, not that home, but in a home, is going to pass from you to your son. And he is going to be the head of a family someday. Now, how do you want him to conduct himself? He'll probably conduct himself just about the manner that you did. Husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own selves, verse 28. He who loves his own wife loves himself. Most of us don't have any trouble thinking a lot of ourselves. In fact, that's what the Bible warns us against. But Paul says we must love our wives as ourselves. Our wife is precious to us. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it as Christ also does the church. How can we fail to nourish and cherish our wife and the relationship we have and to do what we can to please her? Now, we don't know. I'm not 100% successful at that. I wouldn't have to tell you that. I've let my wife down more than one time, but I ought not do that. I ought not have the attitude, well, after all, she's just a woman, and I'm in charge. That's not the way a man's supposed to look upon his leadership in the home. It is to be a leadership that is totally committed to the welfare and the well-being of those in that home, and particularly we're talking about the wife. Now, some men have failed to exercise good leadership. In the book of 1 Samuel chapter 2, as well as on into chapter 3, of course, we have the story there of Eli. Eli had some sons who were also priests, and he didn't do a very good job when it came right down to it, when the tough time came. He did not rebuke his sons. Very often, I think, at least I'll speak for myself, in thinking about this story of Eli and how that he did not discipline his sons, it's tempting to think that he didn't discipline them when they were small boys. That's not really what that's about. They were grown men, and they needed to be rebuked. In 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 13, the custom of the priest with the people, when any man was offering a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come while the meat was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand, thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the fork brought up, the priest would take for himself. Thus they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Now, we're not going to keep on reading all that, but suffice it to say, they were to take a part of that, but there were regulations about that. Well, they were defrauding the people. And not only that, their sin was so great, they really said that they despised the offering of the Lord in verse 17. And not only that, here they were in verse 22. It says, Eli was very old, and he heard that his sons were doing to all Israel and how they lay with the women who served at the doorway of the tent of meeting. They were here committing adultery right here next to the temple. Well, now what should have been done about that? They should have been put to death. And so when scriptures talk about Eli being condemned because he did not discipline his sons, it's talking about at that point in their life. He should have been the one to have done something about that. And he didn't. Well, certainly it would be a difficult thing to do. Nobody would say that it wouldn't be, but that was his responsibility. And so he didn't shoulder that responsibility in the home. He didn't take the mantle of leadership like he should have. He failed to lead his family. So now, men, what kind of job are we doing here? Now remember, if you got some sons in the home, they're watching you. And they will grow up and be pretty much the same kind of husband you are. I don't know about you, but I look back over my married life and I set a bad example sometime in front of my sons. And I've even taken the opportunity, the one that lives the closest to me, I see him often, we talk quite a bit, and there's times when certain things will come up, and I'll just have to flat out tell him, Tim, don't do Martha like I did your mother. Don't treat her like that. Or something that maybe he does need to do for her. You be sure and do this for Martha. I didn't do that often enough for your mother. I can't go back and change all of that, but I can try to get him to realize that the job that he has now assumed as a husband and now a father is a serious one, and that he needs to devote himself to the well-being of his family. You see, I pass that mantle down to him. That's serious. And those of you that still have some boys in the home and they're still quite small, you still got some time. And if you can take stock of yourself and realize, you know, I'm not really doing a very good job here, you've got time to change it. Now, it's never too late to change. But if they're already gone and out of the home, about all you can do is apologize to them for setting a bad example. But if they're still in the home, you've got time to show them what a husband is supposed to do and how he is supposed to gently and lovingly lead his family. And so the mantle of leadership in the home, we pass that down to our sons. Well, you know, they're going to imitate us. They're going to be pretty much what we are. But there's another mantle, and that is the mantle of guiding the household. Now, this one, of course, it passes from mother to daughters. We're not talking about running the husband. We're not talking about ruling the husband. We've already saw how that God placed the responsibility of leadership on the man, and the position of headship resides with the men, the husbands. But he does, in fact, place the responsibility of guiding the home on the wives and the mothers. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 14. This passage is talking about widows, younger widows. And he says, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, give the enemy no occasion for reproach. In other words, guide the household. In the book of Titus, chapter 2, verse 4 and verse 5, encourage or teach. What's that? Who's supposed to do that? Older women, back in verse 3. What are they supposed to be? Reverent in their behavior. Not malicious gossips. Not enslaved to much wine. Teaching what's good. Teaching the young women, love your husbands, love your children. Be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, subject to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be dishonored. If you've got daughters in your household, mothers, you're going to pass a mantle on to them. Someday, when they get married, they're going to have a family to take care of. They're going to have a household to guide and to keep that household running smoothly. Now, they have to learn that from somebody. You're the one that's supposed to teach them that. Now, in general, of course, older women can teach younger women, but the primary classroom is in the home. And how are you doing at that? They need to know what is involved in keeping house. And quite frankly, that's not being taught. I kind of would hate to be a young man looking for a wife today unless I wanted to eat out all the time. They don't know how to cook anything. And you know the reason some young ladies today don't know how to cook anything? Because their mothers don't show them how to cook. And sometimes they don't show them how to cook because they don't know how to cook. And they don't know how to keep a household running. You know, that's a big job. I wouldn't want that job. As badly sometimes as I feel like I'd sure like to get rid of the job I have as the head of the household, sometimes you have to make decisions you kind of wish that the wife could make, but you can't. You can't pass the buck. You know, I get to thinking about it, and I say, well, you know, all in all, this is not too bad. That's a tough job, running a household. And it is the responsibility of the wife to do that. And you're teaching your daughters how to do that by the very example you set in front of them. You think about that worthy woman over there in Proverbs chapter 31. Could you keep up with her? Could you keep up with her? I don't know if I keep up with her or not. She rises up early in the morning. Doesn't lay around half the day. Doesn't tell the husband, get up and get a bowl of cornflakes if you want it, and get on out of here and get to work. Don't wake me up. She rises up early in the morning to see to the needs of her household. Verse 15, she rises up while it's still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She starts out her day very early. And she doesn't start out the day just sitting around. She's already very industrious and very involved in the running of that household. And we're not going to take time to look at all that because we don't have time to do that. But she's a busy woman guiding her household. And in addition to taking care of the things that are in the household, what else does she do? Well, it says in verse 16, she considered a field and buys it, and from her earnings plants a vineyard. She has some industry going here on the side. You see, it doesn't say in the Bible anywhere that women have to be kept at home as if they are some kind of slave to that house. But they are to run that household. And the problem that we have so often is that women get caught up in something else and running the household is neglected. Now, when running the household is neglected, they are neglecting a God-given duty. But look at the rewards that a woman has to guide the household and to be the kind of wife that she ought to be. Just think about this. She looks well to the ways of her household. Verse 27, does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her. Her husband also and praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. That's a reward in and of itself, to have your children, when they grow up, it finally dawns on them what kind of sacrifices you made while they were growing up. Because when we're kids, we don't think about that. And now that we're grown up, when we look back and we realize, boy, now I know how I got a new pair of jeans and how I got a new shirt and how I got some new tennis shoes for the new school year. And Mom didn't get a new dress. She needed one. She wanted one. She didn't get one. And so a lot of times it's not until we grow up and we're able to go back to our mothers and say, you know, I sure love you and I sure appreciate what you did for me. Now, I'm telling you right now, young people, you don't have to wait until you're grown up any more than that. You go to your mom and you tell her that. You tell her that. I guarantee you they're making some sacrifices for you that you don't even know about. They are. And husbands, we need to tell our wives how excellent we think that they are. There's a lot of joking around about wives, and I'm not opposed to joking around about wives. I joke around about mine. She thinks sometimes she's married to a joke, probably. We have a good time like that, but you know, I try to find some serious times, and I tell her how much I love her and how much I appreciate her, how that I certainly could not be doing the work I'm doing without her. That's what this text is about. Now, ladies, there's a mantle that you're going to pass on to your daughters. What kind of wife and mother do you want them to be? Well, they'll be pretty much like you are. We've had a lot of damage that has been done through the years through the women's liberation movement that did not die. Just because the Equal Rights Amendment did not pass in 1976, they didn't quit working. They just went at it another way, and they have undermined the family. They have undermined the expectation of women. As they get married and they think, well, you can have it all. You can have your career and you can have your family and you can get it all done in a 24-hour period. That's not realistic. And I, as a preacher, cannot tell you, well, how do you get that thing balanced? I don't know, but I know what God says. And I know that God says that women are to be there guiding the household. Now, if you can guide the household and do some other things, that's fine. But understand that that's what God expects you to do. That's your primary responsibility. And don't listen to what these people say out there that said, well, that's not very fulfilling, just guiding the household. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Don't pay attention to them. Are your daughters or granddaughters being prepared for the task that is before them? You're passing that mantle down to them. Well, let's move on and talk about in the church. There's the mantle of leadership of elders. Elders oversee the local church. I'm not going to dwell on the passages that deal with that. I think that we're pretty familiar with that. Elders were told to feed the flock of God, which was among them. They were appointed to serve in a local church. That's their sphere of responsibility. They are to be respected. They are to have their authority respected in the local church. And Peter wrote, of course, being not only an apostle, but he writes that he was also an elder. And he very plainly sets forth the limitations of their service. 1 Peter chapter 5 verse 2, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. Peter said, now you take charge of those that are among you, not down the road, not across town, not across the country, among you. I heard of an elder several years ago that went to another congregation that was having some difficulty, showed up one afternoon when they were going to have a meeting, and they said, brother so-and-so, what are you doing here? Well, I've come over here to help you solve your problems. They looked at him, and the preacher, I think it was, looked at him and said, tell you what, you need to get in your car and go back home, mind your own business. And that's right. Elders don't have any business going around poking their nose in some other church's affairs. It's a local church responsibility. But that's a mantle of leadership, and it's got to be passed on. When a man becomes an elder, he does not at that stage take on the ability to live forever. Someday, the elders of any church will need to be replaced for a number of reasons, not just death or illness. They may move away. It's important then that in a local church, there are men that are being trained to pick up the mantle of leadership. Now notice also that Elijah did not name his successor, and neither do elders name theirs. But elders are appointed because they meet certain qualifications. And they are then men that are to be obeyed. Their authority is to be respected. And so there's that mantle of leadership. It's an important one. Now, you young men, you may not even be married yet. What you need to do is set a goal of someday being an elder in the Lord's church. And then begin to work toward that goal. Now, that will mean, of course, if you've got to be a Christian to begin with, and that when you begin to think about marriage, you think about a young girl that if she's pretty, that's real good, but make sure you choose some young lady that will be a qualified elder's wife, who recognizes the responsibility of being a Christian and also what it might involve in being an elder's wife. And you marry some girl like that. Because somebody has to take up that mantle someday and carry on, just as Elisha took over the mantle of leadership from Elijah. Now, what are we doing in local churches to encourage our young men to be elders? Well, sometimes we're discouraging them. We go home from services, and all the way home, we gripe and fuss about the elders. And we get home, and we have roast elders for dinner. Why, those men can't do anything right. And we just pick, and we find fault. We never hardly say an encouraging word. And then we wonder why there's not any elders in the church. Well, who would want to be one? Who would want to be one? We've got to be very aware of the impact this can have on our young men. Because there is a mantle of leadership that has to be picked up by somebody. We need to encourage this process to go on. Many churches don't have elders. The Church of Crestwood hasn't had elders for many, many years. The last elders sort of moved away one by one and it dissolved the eldership. But what happened after that is there was some failure. Matter of fact, there was failure before that because men were not trained and prepared to step in and pick up that mantle, and so we don't have elders. That's not the way the Lord intended it. That's not at all the way He intended it. We need to be encouraging our young men to be elders. We need to be encouraging our young ladies to think about being an elder's wife. The mantle of leadership in the church. But then we've got a mantle of service as deacons. they meet certain qualifications as well, 1 Timothy chapter 3. We're not going to study the qualifications, but there's the reference for your benefit. It has to be passed on. And you know, being a deacon is not just some glorified title. There's work involved in that. And they may be assigned different responsibilities in the local church, but they are accountable to the elders and to the church as well. And that they are performing a service for the church. Well, they're not going to live forever either. Somebody needs to someday become a deacon and serve the local church. Well, how are we doing on that? They've got to be replaced. And so how are we doing? We could go on and talk about the mantle of the teachers. Serving as a teacher, a Bible class teacher in the Lord's church. They don't just appear on the spot unless they move into town. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, Paul said to Timothy there, "The things you've heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit to faithful men," and that's men or women, that's a generic term there, meaning men or women, "faithful men who will be able to teach others also." Now that's not specifically talking about Bible class teachers, but it would include them. We need to be training teachers in the church. But how many times is that going on? Well, that's why we run into shortages of teachers, because we're not training teachers in many cases in the Lord's church. And I have no idea of the situation here, so I'm just speaking in general. But I know how it is in most places. My dad was serving as an elder many years ago, and he had trouble even convincing the other elders we need to have a training class. We need to begin to train some of these young men for some of the work that is to take place in the local church. He couldn't even convince some of the other elders of the necessity of it. Now, you know there's something wrong there. There's something bad wrong there. Well, someone says, you know, I'd like to be a deacon, but I just don't have time. I'd like to be a deacon, but, you know, my job takes up so much of my time. The Lord's not going to accept all of our excuses, folks. The Lord says that we are to put the kingdom first. "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. All these things will be added unto you." We talked about that last night. How that worldliness creeps in and takes over and crowds out the things of God. Things not wrong within themselves, but they get grown to such an extent in our life that we don't have time for the work that God has given us to do. Deacons are busy men when they are taking care of their responsibility as they should. And excuses are not acceptable, and we know Luke 14, and we know what takes place there, and all of the excuses that are offered. And they were rejected. They were not allowed to enter in. And so, deacons. Well, what about song leaders? We've got some good song leaders here. You've been at work training them over the years. And there are some that aren't leading singing perhaps anymore, but somebody did the right thing along the way and trained some of these young men, and so you got some song leaders, but they're not going to be able to lead singing forever. As good a job as they do, got to keep training. There's a mantle of service with regard to song leading. Because we're authorized to sing and to sing only. And we need someone up here to direct us in our singing. To choose songs that are spiritual songs, that are uplifting to us, to help us grow and to mature, to be edified. That will be songs that will bring praise unto God. We need men that will do that. Now they're an expedient, of course, to the work of singing, and we understand that, I would imagine, at least in this audience. But that's a mantle of service. There are some congregations, they don't have song leaders. I've gone places back way many years ago. I went to a place, like a lot of other men did, once a month to preach. Get a little experience more than anything. One Sunday when I went there, the man who normally taught the class and led the singing was sick. And he presided at the Lord's Supper. So I did everything except help myself serve the Lord's Supper. One man helped serve the Lord's Supper. I had to lead the prayer. I had to take charge of the Lord's Supper. I had to preach. I had to teach the class. And I had to lead the singing. Now there's other men sitting out there. They wouldn't do it. I see there's something wrong there. They failed to prepare themselves. Now maybe none of them would ever be a really good song leader. Maybe they wouldn't be as good as somebody else. But you know, friend, no matter how you carry a tune, even if you need a bucket with two handles, Be prepared sometime if need be. Get up there and lead singing. You may not be a song leader, but you can lead singing that time because it's necessary. I'll never forget that place. I just don't understand that kind of a thing. We've got to be prepared to take over these jobs and these responsibilities in the local church. And there's other areas. Generally speaking, we are to be engaged in good works. You know, in every local congregation, when we think about visiting the sick, there's a few people that come to mind. Oh, they're always out there visiting the sick. They're always out there preparing food for those that are not able to cook. And they're the ones that are always running errands for some of the elderly people who can no longer get out. The sad thing is that a lot of times only two or three names come to mind. Why is that? Well, you know, I'd like to be more engaged in that, but I'm too busy. I don't have time. Titus chapter 2, verse 11 through 14 ends on the thought, of course, that we are to be zealous of good works or good deeds. We are a peculiar people, God's own special people, zealous of good deeds. It's not just the preacher's responsibility, and it's not just the elder's responsibility to visit the sick. It's the responsibility of every member of a local church to visit the sick. Now, will the preacher be visiting the sick? Certainly. He's a Christian. Will the elders be visiting the sick? Certainly they're going to be doing that. But it isn't just their job exclusively. And we should not ever get the impression that it is. We must then strive to be zealous of good deeds. Take over that mantle. To be vessels of honor, fitted for service. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 21. I wonder who replaced Dorcas? I want to think that somebody replaced her. Somebody was watching Dorcas. Somebody admired what she did, I'd like to think anyway. And that at some point in time, when Dorcas passed from this life, somebody had been trained by her, if nothing more by example, maybe by deed, but if nothing more by example. And now, lo and behold, they have picked up the responsibility, and now they are carrying it on. You remember Dorcas? Acts chapter 10, verse 36 through 42, and that's not the right chapter. I'm not getting this. My computer's not getting things right here on me. She's the one that made the garments. I'm back in the wrong chapter. How about chapter 9? I put 9 in there, and it put out 10. Now, in Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, translated in Greek as Dorcas. This woman was abounding with deeds of kindness and charity, which she continually did. It came about at that time she fell sick and died. They washed her body, laid it in the upper room. Now, of course, Peter comes in here and raises her from the dead. But she eventually died again. Now, you just look at the description of what this woman did. She was such a good woman. Look at the people who were mourning her passing at that time, the widows that were standing there weeping as they looked at all the garments that she made. Somebody need to step in there and do that. Somebody need to replace Dorcas. I wonder who replaced Epaphroditus. Philippians chapter 2, if you're about to have a baby and it's going to be a boy, there's a good name for a boy. I haven't heard anybody use that name, so he'd be the only one in kindergarten with that name. I can probably assure you that. And of course, he'd run away from home as soon as he could, get away from anybody that called him Epaphroditus. But over here in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 25, I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, who's also your messenger and minister to my need. He was longing for you all, distressed because you had heard that he was sick. Indeed, he was sick to the point of death, but God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Do you understand what this is saying here? Now here Epaphroditus is, he's sick. But what is bothering him more is not his own illness, but what's bothering him is the fact that they're concerned about that he's sick. He doesn't have time to think about himself. He's still thinking about them. And he's bothered by the fact that they're concerned that he's sick, and he wants them to know, I'm doing all right. We need people like that in the church, but they don't live forever. We need people like that who are so dedicated to serving other people, who take up the concerns of other people and make them their concerns. I wonder who replaced Epaphroditus. I hope somebody did. And here's another one right here. Onesiphorus. Another good name. If you had twins, you could call them right that, right there. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 16. The Lord grant mercy to the house of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chain. But when he was in Rome, he eagerly searched for me and found me. The Lord grant to him to find mercy from the Lord on that day. You know very well what services he rendered at Ephesus. Here was a man who searched out the Apostle Paul. Not ashamed of the fact that Paul was in chains. That didn't bother him. He wanted to go and see what kind of service he could render to Paul. And Paul says that he oft refreshed me. And if I understand that word refreshed, it comes basically from the same word we get our word refrigerator from. How refreshing is it in on a hot summer day to open up that refrigerator door? Get that blast of cool air on you. Feels good, doesn't it? Onesiphorus here often refreshed me, Paul said. Like a breath of cool air coming into his life, coming into a troubled time in his life. I wonder who replaced him. I hope somebody did. We need people in a local church like that who are refreshing, who can come to us when we're having a hard time, and they go. By the time they go away, we're feeling better. They've refreshed us. These are mantles that get passed down from one generation to another. And so I would challenge us all, look around and see what kind of mantle is laying around that I can pick up. Maybe I can pick up a mantle of leadership as a young man and desire to become an elder and work toward being an elder. Maybe I can look around and see the mantle of service of a deacon and determine that I want to be a deacon. Or that there's a song leader and I admire his ability to lead singing. I'm going to watch him. I'm going to learn from him. And I'm going to pick up that mantle of song leading. And someday I want to be a song leader. That's what we're talking about. And encouraging our young men and our young ladies to pick up these mantles of service and responsibility in the home and in the church. Elisha made a commitment to serve God. Said goodbye to his family and went with Elijah. And served him faithfully. What kind of commitment have we made? Have we made a strong and consistent commitment to serve God, or are we weak and inconsistent? Can we be counted on, or are we really undependable? Are we strong Christians, or are we just fair weather Christians? There are mantles of responsibility and service that we need to think about. I hope that we've benefited from the lesson tonight. I trust that the things we have said have been from the Word of God. I've tried to make them that way as I have all week. Should you be here tonight and you're not a Christian, we would encourage you to reconsider and see where your life is going and determine that you want to serve God and that someday you want to be in heaven with the redeemed of all ages and take the necessary steps to make sure that that is your destination one day. And if you have done that and gone back into the world, please use this time, this opportunity. Get back in faithful duty to God. Look around, see what needs to be done, and get busy and do it. Let us know as we stand and sing together.